From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump's comments during a private meeting with lawmakers where he derided immigrants from so-called nations have wreaked havoc here and abroad. An angry and defensive president who has both confirmed and denied his use of the language has now declared that hopes for a DREAM Act might be dead. Internationally, the African Union, which is a group of 55 nations, issued a statement condemning Trump's words as, quote, outrageous, racist, and xenophobic, and demanded a retraction and an apology. My guest is Sameer Dosani. He's an American independent activist and freelance journalist joining us now from Johannesburg, South Africa. Welcome to the program, Sameer.
Thanks for having me.
So first, I should ask you whether you were even surprised that Trump is reported to have made these comments. To me, it seemed perfectly in line with exactly the kind of language he has used before, the kind of president he is. It still shocked me, though, but in retrospect, I wasn't surprised. What about you?
Yeah, for me, I mean, this all happened, as I'm sure you will recall, at the same news cycle as The Fire and the Fury, the Michael Wolff book. So I was in the middle completing that book when this story broke. So no, it doesn't come as a surprise to me. And frankly, I mean, you know, Trump being abusive to 2/3 of the world's population, I don't know, it's kind of sad when the US president says something that insults almost everyone on the planet. And I'm like, meh, you know, another day. That's what he does. But that's what we come to expect.
So these comments took place in the context of a discussion on immigration. When Trump met with Democrats and Republicans, there was a part of this meeting that was open and actually being televised. And then there was a private aspect to the meeting where he, I suppose, let loose a little bit more. And it's been interesting to see the way in which lawmakers have responded, depending upon which party they're from. Some Republicans who were present at that meeting essentially deny that Trump said this. Others have confirmed that he said this. So it's not just him that's the problem, right? There's a whole faction of the American polity that is complicit.
Yeah, I mean, again, going from what we knew and you know, the take in that book that I mentioned, The Fire and the Fury, this is a presidency that just kind of makes stuff up. And when it says something, and it likes to be known for its brashness, right? It likes to say things that will piss people off. But when it goes too far, it just denies it. And you know, given that we're sort of post-truth and post-expertise, or what this administration is, the facts have no bearing in the matter. It's just a he said, she said kind of a situation. At least that's what they try and create. So you're absolutely right. It's the Republican Party. It's this whole post-truth fake news moment that we're living in that Trump has helped to create, where he can have semi-plausible deniability. I didn't even think this is plausible deniability. I think this is like sort of maybe kind of plausible deniability, and that's enough for him. And he feels like that's enough for his base, and his base is 30% of the population or so, or 30% of the voting public, which is not going to move. No matter what he does. You know, the story with the porn star, the story, no matter what outrageous story you come up with, they are not going to move. So, and he feels like that's all he needs.
Well, among his responses were, of course, everything is on Twitter. So Trump tweeted, never said anything derogatory about Haitians other than Haiti is obviously a very poor and troubled country. Never said take them out, made up by Dems. I have a wonderful relationship with Haitians. Probably should record future meetings. Unfortunately, no trust. It would have been nice if there had been a recording of this meeting. But he essentially, and this was one of the things that some members of the African Union took issue with, that he apologized or he denied that he said anything about Haiti, didn't mention Africa. Let's talk about the response from the African Union and individual African countries, Botswana, South Africa among them. How have people responded?
Well, before I go to that, can I talk a second about Haiti? I mean, Haiti is a country. Haiti is the poorest country or the second poorest country, depending on the year, in the Western Hemisphere. It has been made entirely so by colonial policies and then by, you know, the wars post-colonialism, right? So The colonial policies, in the colonial times, there were two prized possessions that the different European countries, France, England, Spain, Portugal, were fighting over. And Hispaniola, the island that's Haiti and the Dominican Republic, was one of them. The other was Bengal in India. So this is the site of massive, you know, European conflict within Haiti over the sugar plantations largely, right? Then when you have the Haiti, as people may not know, some of your listeners may not know, was the second independent country, the independent republic, in the Western Hemisphere after the United States. It got its independence in, I believe, 1798. So also in the 18th century, a few years after the U.S. Revolution, the American Revolution. And in order to, and you know, France, it got its independence from France. France kept attacking it until Haiti agreed to pay damages for property that was lost. What was the property in question? Themselves. So Haiti paid, you know, owed millions of dollars, in fact, what would probably be billions of U.S. dollars in today's dollars, to France to pay for their own bodies. And this is a debt that was taken over by the IMF, you know, due to an oil crisis in the 1970s and 80s. It's a debt that the Haitians are still paying off. And when Haiti has had sort of democratic uprisings, have had independent leaders that have tried to question this, during the time of George H.W. Bush, during the time of Bill Clinton, these administrations have intervened to subvert the democratic process in Haiti and put in their own leaders who they supported. So to call Haiti, you know, a shithole is extremely problematic, because if it is a terrible place to live, which it is, it's largely because of what the U.S. has done to it. So this is something that the U.S. is absolutely culpable in. To return to your question of the African Union and African states, it's a different story here in Africa, because you know, for me as an American, as someone who grew up in the United States, I knew, and someone who's been following the career of Donald Trump for many years, I knew what to expect of the guy. But my friends and colleagues here, even progressives, didn't, and they saw the possibility of an out of the box, a sort of off beltway, strongman type person. They saw that as having some potential, some good potential, because there were, you know, because the relationships, as I mentioned in the case of Haiti, but it wouldn't be that different with many African countries, the relations of traditional Washington elites with African countries has been pretty atrocious, and we can get into some details. But I mean, they're serving the needs of their own companies of corporate power, who largely want the African continent as a place to extract mineral wealth and as a market to sell goods. So they're not happy, you know, my colleagues here in Africa were not happy about that and have reason not to be happy about that. So they saw the possibility of Donald Trump being something other than that excited them. And we also have a history of strong leaders, socialist leaders, liberation leaders, strong men who kind of sound and talk a little bit like Donald Trump from time to time, but have very different politics. So those kind of words, those kind of harsh talk, that kind of harsh language, resonated differently here in Africa. So for them, it's like, this is like, okay, there were many things that Donald Trump has done so far that have disappointed them, but this was another, and this was extremely disappointing. So I think that now, even those people who were still holding out some hope that this administration might be different with regard to its relations with Africa, they now feel that this is all a complete mess.
Right. Samantha Power, who was a former Obama administration official, responded that the statement that was put out by the African Union was unprecedented, that it was just sort of really shocking to see the African Union make this statement to, you know, an unprecedented statement made by a sitting U.S. president. The way in which the sort of Trump administration has flouted its position to the world, isn't that part of Trump's selling point to his own base, the sort of scorched earth policy that I will say what I want and the world be damned, they will bow down to America, right? I mean, it's sort of reflected in one of Trump's tweets after the story broke, where he simply tweeted America first in all caps and exclamation point, was sort of thumbing his nose at the world saying, yeah, I said it, so what, deal with it.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a parody of himself. You know, he's becoming this, you know, maybe there was something of substance there. You know, maybe there's even if I talk with some of my, and I do have Trump supporter friends, so, you know, even when I talk with some of them, they have more intellectual depth than Trump himself, and they don't have that much intellectual depth, right? So he's kind of becoming a kind of a joke. And I think there's a subsection of the population, I don't think it's 30% of the population, I think it's much, much less, who will continue to support him no matter what. But I think that, you know, the more that he does this ludicrous stuff, now saying something is not as bad as what he's done. So we can talk about that too. But
right.
The more he says these ludicrous kind of things, the less likely he is to win another election, frankly.
So on the diplomatic international front, what many countries can do is sort of wait him out. But here in the United States, where there are real lives, families whose safety, security, and, you know, just simply being together is at stake, the way in which Trump spouts the words and the reactions to them have very serious consequences. So let's go through what happened with the immigration story. Initially, in the televised part of the meeting, Donald Trump essentially said something that sounded like he was willing to endorse a path to citizenship for immigrants. He said he was willing to, quote, take the heat politically for an approach that seemed to contradict his immigration position. The New York Times reported it. It was televised. Then when the story broke about what he said privately, everything changed. And he tweeted that the so-called bipartisan DACA deal presented to myself by the Democrats was a big step backwards. The wall was not properly funded. He blamed the Democrats for demanding a bill that was just sort of untenable. And suddenly the fact that he's being called out for his racism is turning into him lashing back and saying, fine, you can't have what you want. I won't give you DACA. I mean, do you see this logic playing out?
Yeah, the thing is that, listen, from what I can tell, and I'm a very far observer here on the African continent trying to observe what's going on in the White House. From what I can tell, he hasn't done what most presidents do in their first year. And he's gotten away with that. Most presidents set up an infrastructure to deliver a policy agenda. He hasn't done that. So, and no one has, it hasn't caused any, you know, the world hasn't ended because he didn't do that, right? So because there's no accountability that he hasn't done, for him not doing what's expected of the presidency, that belies deeper problems within our democratic institutions. And those will also need to be addressed once this whole Trump problem is done. So the problem is that he agrees with whatever the last person who's praising him says. And if anyone, is not nice to him, he just feels the need to lash out. That's just the person he is. That's the person he's being allowed to be and empowered to be by the Republican Congress.
That's a really important point, that he's been allowed to be and empowered to be. And I want to quote Sarah Huckabee Sanders, his press person's justification for what he said when she, you know, was asked to respond to the comments that he made last week. She said the allegations of racism were outrageous and ludicrous. And this was the kicker. She said, if the critics of the president were right about him being a racist, why did NBC give him a show for a decade on TV? Why did Chuck Schumer and all of his colleagues come and beg Donald Trump for money? If he is who they want to try to portray him as, why did they want to be, you know, with him for years and years in various activities, whether it was in events and fundraisers and other things? So, Samir, why indeed? Because I think that is the question. Since we know Donald Trump has been this way, he's made no secret about it. Everybody who has gone along with him is complicit in his racism and his racist policies, aren't they? Including some Democrats, including the Republican Party. You know, Paul Ryan can turn around and say he's appalled, even John McCain, although John McCain and Trump have had a longstanding feud. But even just sticking with Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell can sort of critique Trump, but in the end, they go to him for, you know, so he can sign their tax bill giveaway to rich folks. They're all complicit.
Yeah. No, for sure they're all complicit, but I'd like to make a larger point because
okay.
They're all, you know, the way that our system works, it's supposed to be, you know, one person, one vote, everyone equal. We all know that's a bit of a joke. We all know that the 1% or the 0.1% can pull a lot of strings. We also know that that demographic, the 1%, the 0.1%, was way, way, way to the right of the U.S. public, right? So they are way more likely to be xenophobic. They are way more likely to be racist. They're way more likely even to be sexist, even though I think sexism is far more pervasive than some of those other things, right? So given that that's the system that we set up, we empower, we enable, we don't destroy, we don't tear down, what do we expect? Of course the Democrats are going to go to whoever may be able to give them a little bit of money. And someone like Donald Trump, yes, he's a racist, but he's also an easy mark. In the sense that you praise him, you say, I saw you look nice on TV, he'll give you, you know, maybe $1 million if he's in a good mood. So that's the perfect donor, and he has no idea what he's talking about. If half the stuff in that Fire and Fury book is true, he literally knows nothing about any policy issue. So he's the perfect mark. You hit him up for something, your pet project, even if it's completely contrary to what his alleged policy agenda is, you probably can still get a couple of hundred thousand dollars out of him for it, right? So this is the system that we've set up. And we are all complicit in maintaining and creating and perpetuating that system. And we need to tear it down. Either now is a great time with Trump in office, but even later would also be a great time. It's time to sort of ask some hard questions of our democratic institutions and fix it.
Samir, finally, is it appropriate that Donald Trump was golfing on MLK Day instead of engaging in public service for the television cameras? I mean, he's being honest. He really couldn't care less about MLK and his legacy. And also, were you sort of glad that he didn't respond to the Hawaii emergency where there was an erroneous alarm that went off about rockets heading to Hawaii? Because had he not been golfing, he might have responded irrationally and entered World War III.
Well,
I mean, maybe it's better. Donald Trump is best when he's sort of playing golf and leaving us alone.
Well, I understand that he was told about that on the golf course a full, I believe it was a full 45 minutes before the public was notified of the false alarm. So that's, you know, one is tempted to say that's a dereliction of duty, but one doesn't know that if one had actually, if he had tried to do his duty, what would it have looked like?
Right, exactly.
So this is a really hard question, right? Do you want Donald Trump doing some version of what he's supposed to do badly? Or do you want him on the golf course where the billionaires belong, out of people's hair? I think the answer is neither. We want Donald Trump held accountable for his various crimes. And that's not going to happen until the Democrats change the balance of power and take back at least one of the houses of Congress. And even then, it's then people like us holding the Democrats accountable. To what they're saying now, to the rhetoric. The rhetoric now sounds nice, but once they're in power, they may not feel accountable to that rhetoric. So it's up to you and me to hold them accountable to that.
Samir, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
My guest has been Samir Dosani, independent activist and freelance journalist from the United States, currently speaking to us from Johannesburg, South Africa. And we have been discussing Trump's racist comments made last week during immigration discussions. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.